ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you to the work session for the City of Cedar Hills. Today is Tuesday, March the 1st, 2016, and I have 6:02 p.m. I'd like to call our work session to order. As we had scheduled, we're going to have a discussion of the management report from staff, and if we have time, then items that are on the agenda starting at 7. So, Mr. Bunker, why don't you go ahead and start with the management discussion?
All right, Mayor and Council, you have received the monthly management report for January, and from what I understand, our time tonight will be spent just going through that management report and answering questions that the council might have. So I'll just start out from the administration department. Last month, we submitted a project idea form to Matlan Association of Governments to be put on the Transportation Improvement Program. And this project that we submitted was the proposal for a new traffic signal at the intersection of Cedar Hills Drive and Canyon Road. And it would include a temporary asphalt walking path from the new Lakeshore Trails subdivision down to the intersection of Cedar Hills Drive and Canyon Road. And so that project was estimated to cost just under $300,000. And so we were seeking funding from MAG in order to help us with those costs. As we submitted our plan, they rank those. They give them a TAC score, a technical advisory committee score. So all the participants in the TAC committee get to vote a scale of 1 to 5 on how viable the projects are. And they really look at the regional importance of the projects. And so they all got a score. The highest score was a 93, which actually was an intersection in Highland on 4800 West and SR92, just on that north leg. There's a whole bunch of cars that as they queue up to that intersection, they get impatient and they drive on the sidewalk in order to turn right and head to the freeway. And so, you know, the TAC committee looks at safety issues like that with, you know, there's a lot of importance to solve something like that. So that project is to widen that intersection and give a dedicated right-hand turning lane on that southbound movement. That project actually scored the highest. And so they were asking $255,000 for that, just that right-hand turn lane. So you can see I have in the report there all the projects listed. And our project scored a 68, which is in the second tier of the projects. The first tier, as you can see, are projects that added up to just over $40 million. And that's where the funding level would end. So projects in Tier 1 ended up at $40.85 million. So the TAC committee said, hey, those are the projects in the Tier 1 area that will most likely be funded, because that's the funding amount that the Mountain Land has to divvy out. So our projects is actually in the Tier 2 level, and it's actually just over halfway down in the Tier 2. One of the issues would be that the projects ahead of us, there's millions of dollars of projects that ranked higher than we did, even in Tier 2. And so they will progress. Let's say someone in the Tier 1 section, if their project does not proceed through the process and they decide to pull their project, they will proceed down into the Tier 2 level projects. And they will go in order of the score that they received. And so we would literally have to have 10 or 12 projects not be viable to be funded in order for us to get funded. And in Tier 2, there is $41.2 million in Tier 2. So it's a whole nother level of funding for that. And then the projects that were in the low-tier ranking area, anything 65 or below, again, there's millions of dollars of projects down there as well. And those projects, they basically have told the sponsors of those projects that they're most likely not going to be considered at all. And so it is highly unlikely that that through this group we would receive funding for this project. But I do want to work with the county and talk with the county about doing this project possibly in a different manner. And it's, council members of Paula called me, talked to me a little bit about it. Maybe we approach the county and look at a different way we attack that problem. Maybe there's a roundabout, or maybe there's some other improvement that gets completed as part of the Canyon Road improvements if that project goes through. And on that subject, we have not heard back from the county if they are planning on proceeding with that project, the Canyon Road Improvement Project. Have not heard yet. So I've spoken with Richard Nelson, the county engineer, several times to find out when we were going to get together and discuss that. And he has mentioned that one of the administrative personnel there at the county would be contacting us to get that meeting set up, but I have not heard word yet. So right now, we don't really have anything for sure set aside for solving the problems crossing Canyon Road at Cedar Hills Drive, but there are things that we're working on. Does anybody have any questions on that?
So how often do they go through this process? How often do they receive funds for projects like this? How does that all work?
So it's an annual process, and projects that applied last year can apply this year. And so the funding varies depending on what kind of funds they get from the federal level. And so it can go up and it can go down. This year we had, I want to say, and I put this in my report, it was just under $200 million worth of projects were proposed with only $40 million to allocate. And so there is significant amount of projects that just can't be funded through this process. And so it's an annual process that we would go through if we have a project. Again, they really put emphasis on regional projects. If you and that's one reason why Highland got such a high ranking. One, it was a safety issue, but two, Alpine City only has two ways to exit Alpine City. Actually, they technically have three, but this is one of the most highly used ways, and their average daily traffic on that road is really high. And so if you look at those projects that were in the first tier, you can tell that they're large projects. The largest one is $6.8 million, and that is the Pony Express Highway out in Saratoga Springs. And it's $6.8 million, but it was highly ranked because of the amount of traffic and the amount of need that is out there.
This is the same process whereby if we were able to ever do anything with Canyon Road, this is where the money came from last year. So last year we were able to cobble together some money from various sources in order to help fix Canyon Road. It's still in limbo, but the money that's being applied for here for a semaphore is the same process that we went through last year to get the money for Canyon Road.
David, I'm wondering if we have ADT numbers for Canyon Road, both before and after 4800 West was constructed, to see whether that's taken some load off the road.
I've seen numbers before 4800 West was completed. I don't have numbers after, but that doesn't mean that UDOT hasn't gathered data. I can find out if
since it's a county road, will UDOT even measure there anymore?
I believe UDOT, from what I understand, UDOT did put tubes down before they turned it over to the county. So I can ask.
That would be great.
Follow up and see what kind of traffic volumes we have.
I'm wondering if it would be appropriate to ask the county, especially while the road has not been rebuilt and it's still narrow, it's still unsafe, it's still not been repaved, could we ask them to put up signs directing trucks that they have to take 4800 West? Lots of smaller communities, I see their signs that say no heavy trucks on this particular road. And now that there's an alternative road, I see trucks driving down Canyon Road and they just use it to get to State Street and then they hit the freeway when they could have gone 4800 West. There was no reason for them to drive that way.
I can definitely ask Richard Nelson about that.
That would improve safety and maybe improve the lengthen the lifetime of that road while it's falling apart.
That's true. Any other questions on that part of the report?
Yeah. Hey, David. Other than this one intersection here on Cedar Hills Drive, is there any other place in the city that we may need this type of help in the foreseeable future? I mean, down maybe on 4800 West, I guess, is Highland, but...
The thing about this money is that it's supposed to be used for a regional purpose. That's mm-hmm. why Canyon Road and a semaphore on Canyon Road can be used. It would never get any traction if we tried to use it for something within the city that does not have a regional purpose.
Okay. Would we need something down on 4800 West and Harvey?
For instance,
when the road that Highland's proposing to push across.
Yes.
For our residents to safely get out onto that road. I mean, once that's built, we're going to need the semaphore there in order to control traffic. I'm just making sure or wondering if we can get some help through this program rather than have to come up with it.
Yeah. I think that, you know, David, correct me if I'm wrong, but, I know for sure that the county pays for the road coming from Highland to Cedar Hills. Harvey Boulevard, I believe, is in American Fork. It's not in Cedar Hills. So
okay, so it starts in American Fork and then we just tie it.
Well, I think at Highland Farms,
that makes sense.
From Highland Farms over, it's not Cedar Hills.
But right there where it comes in.
Because they've stayed in American Fork, not annexed into Cedar Hills.
Yeah. There's already a semaphore scheduled for that intersection.
Okay,
perfect. As part of that east-west corridor plan. Yeah. So...
And Gary, can I ask you a question about Canyon Road?
Yes.
If the county chooses not to pursue this, as it seems like they're not,
yes.
Is there a time period after which the money expires? Has it already expired since it's not been spent? Or?
That money has not expired. And so there, and I keep pushing this along, the county knows that we need an answer. And so if they, so let me walk you through the process.
Yeah.
So they don't have the ability to unilaterally deny this project because the committee on which I sit, the Mountain Land Transportation of Government's Regional Transportation Committee, that's the one I chair, it's made up of about 30 mayors and county commissioners. So they're only 3 votes out of 30. And this project was rated very highly.
Mm-hmm.
So what they could do is say that try and make a case that because they own the road that they are not going to accept the funds and they don't want it to be used for that. So that's a drastic measure, and you know, I think that some people on our committee consider that the nuclear option, because when BRT passed, county commissioner said that and some of the reasons that the mayors voted for BRT was we were told that our individual projects would not be delayed or derailed and money diverted from our projects to be used towards BRT. It sets a dangerous precedent if that were to happen. So I think Pleasant Grove and Cedar Hills have got to figure out and we submitted a letter to the county, but we've got to figure out what it is we're willing to do. We submitted what we're willing to do.
Pleasant Grove's willing to do more than we are, so there's a problem.
How much more are they willing to do?
Are they
willing to take ownership?
No, I don't think so. I think that I haven't seen their letter, but David has. But we were willing to, I think, do striping and do some potholes. And Pleasant Grove was going to plow, and we were going to pay them for plowing. But they were willing to do more than we were. And so I think there has to be a reconciliation between the two cities in terms of what each city is willing to do. Because if one city is willing to do much more, one city is willing to do which less, the county's going to have a problem with that. And I think they already are.
Yeah. So I mean, we've talked about this a lot in the past, but so maybe I'm repeating myself. But if the county was willing to convert this into a road that we would find acceptable, then I might be more amenable to even taking the road over it and maintaining it long term. But that would require more than just this project. That would require a commitment from them that, okay, we're going to pursue this project and finish it, and then we'll tick off the other things on your list, which would be really necessary to make the road safe for a community to use. So that would include things like roundabouts or signals at appropriate intersections. That would include grading. David has a longer list of things that he wished that road would have. And if they would kick in the additional funding or a promise that, hey, down the line, you know, we'll do that in the next 5 years, then I might commit to, okay, in 5 years I might be willing to take that road over.
I'll give you my take on this, and which is that the county is position, I think, is, and I think this position is the one that has the votes. I think there's one county commissioner that supports our view. I think there's two that do not. And so I think they view their road as a county road, which would be designed and maintained similar to other county roads that they have. And the type of improvements that you're talking about, Daniel, is more akin to a municipal road. Therefore, you've got a problem.
Yeah,
I get that. I don't see them getting to where you want them to go.
Yeah.
And so,
but what I would explain to them is that the state did exactly that for 4800 West, North County Boulevard. They turned that into a road with all of the improvements that you would want to make that into a municipal road.
They know that.
And then turned that, and then, you know, of course they took ownership of it, right?
Yeah.
But Canyon Road has been decrepit for so long. It's been ignored, and they really should have improved it.
I agree.
A long time ago.
So
it's their responsibility. If they would prefer that the city own it, which I know they do, I think it's incumbent on them to turn it into a road that is acceptable to the city and provide the improvements that it needs.
And so I've been making this case to them for quite a few years, which is they believe that Canyon Road is not used as much as I think we believe it is. And so...
So we have ADTs to prove that, right?
Well, and they've done traffic studies that they think validate that position. And so they seem to believe that, they do own this road. And so they can do nothing. Mm-hmm. And so they can essentially say, look, it's our road. We can do whatever we want. If you don't like it, go pound sand. And essentially, Commissioner Ellertson did that when he came to our council meeting last year.
Yeah.
So I'm taking the Ronald Reagan approach when he said that if someone offers me a half a loaf of bread, I'll take it and I'll come back and try and get more. This is a situation where I think if we take a half a loaf and come back and try and get more, that we're heading in the right direction. Continue on, David.
Unless there's any other questions on that, the next section is finance. So, Charles, if you want to talk about your management report there.
Okay, my monthly management report. I gave some history on Cedar Hill's certified property tax rate and the amounts that the city has collected in the last several years. Our current property tax rate is 0.002315. The mayor had asked how much would our amount decrease if we got it down to 0.0019. So in the report, I explained that's at the current values of last year, that would be $178,000. We've been averaging $13,300 in residential growth. That's a lot of years of new growth. That's not just a drop in the bucket. Some of the things that have changed with our city since our rate changed in 2007, we had a 0.00169. That was our complete rate. But when we added the golf course, we added the debt along with it, and our rate went from 0.00169 to 0.002857. Now, the rate changes based on how the valuations are, and in 2007, 2008 is right when the values at the county peaked the highest. So even though that rate seems low, we are probably asking more per household then than we are now because of the housing boom then. Now, this next year, when the valuations come out, maybe we're close to where we were then, but based on last year's values, we're still way below what we were then. Our current operating rate is lower than it was then. Our current operating rate is 0.001594. Now, since that time in 2007, I made a list of some of the things that have changed with the city. One of the things is public safety. We used to not have any staffing at the public safety building. So our paramedic fire services was $178,000 budget at that time, and now it is around $675,000.
What was the first one?
178.
And it went to what?
675.
What time frame?
From 2007 to now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So 9 years.
We've got 9 years, 500,000.
There's a lot that took place.
No, I know that, but I'm just, that's...
So that's...
getting that to sink in for a minute.
Police services in that time grew from 276 to 400,000. And what I say in this article is we have a great value for our public safety. Even with that growth, I look at Saratoga Springs, where I live, and they pay $2.8 million just for their police services at $23,000. And that is not untypical to pay about $1 million or more for every 10,000 people. So we're paying...
Did you say they pay that for their police service?
Yes, just police, $2.8 million.
Saratoga City has their own police department, though.
Yep. And they outsource their police to Bluffdale, and Bluffdale, I think, pays $1 million for their services.
Oh, they do outsource it now?
They have for the last few years.
Oh, okay.
A
few years ago, they
Bluffdale
did.
Went with UPD. Saratoga Springs isn't outsourced. They share their department with Bluffdale because it borders, and they're able to give Bluffdale a better deal, and it's still $1 million for Bluffdale.
And so that $2.8 million covers just the Saratoga Springs?
Police. Yes.
That's, and they have a population of, you said, 23,000?
Yes.
Did I hear that right? Wow.
Okay. Yeah. And that is not untypical. Their fire budget is around 400. So less than ours.
400,000?
Yes. They have like probably on call.
Well, I know that they have 3 full-time captains,
yeah,
and that they have a fire chief, and I believe it's 3 full-time paramedics.
Really?
And that would eat up 400,000 real quick.
Yeah.
report, they're just
I don't know.
Nothing.
Maybe their budget.
Can I interrupt you for just a second?
Sure.
Would everybody look at the sky? Is it incredible tonight or what?
Mike, you beat me by about 5 seconds. I was about to interrupt me.
Yeah, it is beautiful. I mean, it's as far as you can see.
Yeah.
It is beautiful.
Yeah, that looks nice.
I think we need a recess.
No, you're fine. In that time also, our community services grew. That's recreation events, library, family festival, arts, youth city council grew from 112,000 to 426,000. Parks were added and grew 81,000 to 178,000. And building and zoning was the one department that really decreased at that time from 489,000 to 362 due to the lack of construction activity. So, but with the community services, that's the one department that's been offsetting most of their expenses, and especially recently. Our financial situation in the city is strong right now, but we have a lot of things coming up. Our assets are just getting older. We're in the middle of litigation. We have some requests. They've been asked for the count priorities that require new funding. Not every request requires new funding, but some of them do. Staffing. We also have one of the things that we do with our general fund budget. We do budget conservatively, but if we didn't, we would have no funding for any parks, any other capital projects. That's how we fund our capital projects. Instead of bonding for the new projects, we plan for some of that excess to go to projects. So, if you look at Highland, when they lowered their property tax rate, they have no money to do any projects at all. They just let things fall apart. So that's where they're at. There's a couple ways we could get our tax rate lower, and I mentioned that if we ever move to a public like some cities like Riverton or whatever, they've moved their public safety to its own taxing entity, and they were able to take that off their operating property tax rate. Riverton actually has a zero property tax rate because they took the property. All the property tax people were paying, and they moved their public safety is provided by Unified Public District and UFA.
So how does that work? Can you explain that?
So those entities get their own, they become taxing entities, and they charge their own property tax rate.
So it shows up as a separate line item on a property, on your
yes.
property tax
statement. Yes. It's a separate, just like Alpine School District.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's one way. Another thing, eventually the golf course debt, when it's paid off, then you're down to an operating rate.
Yeah. I've got a question. Maybe the mayor can answer this. So I know that the fire district has in previous years talked about this taxing district, and it hasn't gone anywhere really. Is it something that just Cedar Hills can do? Can we just do that ourselves and say this is our portion into the fire district, or...
It's a good question.
That's a really good question.
If we had our own police and our own fire, the answer is yes. But we belong to Lone Peak Public Safety, which is fire for us, police for the other two cities. So Lone Peak Public Safety would have to create its own taxing district.
So would the three other cities have to?
They would.
So they would have to agree to
so
do
the
it
district
as well.
Would have to. So what would happen is the board that Daniel and I sit on, Daniel's vice chair this year,
right,
would have to make a proposal to become a taxing district, take it to the cities. Cities would have to approve it. And then
we couldn't just do that as
the
a
residents
city and say
have to
our,
vote for it, right?
Our,
what's that, Cheryl?
Do the residents vote for it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, I believe that the board can't do it themselves, so it would have to go to the residents. I'm not a big fan of it, and I'll tell you why, which is that, and Mr. Crawley will really appreciate this, which is that government tends to grow unless it's checked.
Absolutely.
And that's part of my desire to move our property tax lower. So if we were to create the Lone Peak Public Safety taxing district by itself, that would reduce our property taxes by the same amount that it's reduced by. However, I would not be surprised to see future councils continue to increase property taxes to the point at which it got up to where it used to be, and yet you're still paying for the public safety tax taxing district on top of
that. You know what? I can see that. I agree to that.
You would have to have a truth in taxation every time, which that is the problem with. Once you cut it, it's very difficult politically to raise it. I mean, especially if you don't have good justification. One of the major things that's coming up is you guys have shown a lot of interest in Deerfield Park, for instance. Just maintaining Deerfield Park would require another $60,000 a year. Where is that money coming from? You might have to do a property tax increase for that just to fund the just so you can mow the grass.
So to Ben's point, I don't know that there would be anything stopping us from saying that we're going to have a separate line item as a property tax levy to levy and commit to the voters that it would go to fire or go to police or go to a pool or go to a park, whatever we would want that to go to. Right? So we could, if we wanted to, start separating out our levies and say, hey, this is on your bill, you can clearly see what goes to fire, for example. The problem with that is that the entire property tax revenue that we receive is roughly equal to the entire amount that we pay for the fire department. And so basically you would just be relabeling property tax to be fire property tax, and we would have absolutely no property tax going to anything else.
So,
and it would also tie future councils' hands as far as how that money could be
appropriated. You're talking about two different things there, though. So if you're talking about just having a different line item for public safety, you can do that already because we do that for the golf course debt.
Mm-hmm.
But what Charles talking about, what we've been talking about, is a taxing district.
No, I understand that.
And so that's a totally
his question was not asking whether we could have a taxing district. His question, I believe, was could we just separate it out on the property tax bill?
And well, yes, no, it was if we could have our own taxing district.
Okay.
Just
I misunderstood that.
And not have Alpine...
I think there's certain areas that you can label things differently. One of them's a government immunity tax, which I've talked about to fund litigation. The county had a health tax. They had a planetarium tax, a library tax at Salt Lake County. So they had all those separate ones. A judgment levy tax, that's when someone like the copper mines says, hey, I know you valued us at so many millions. We think we're only worth half that. And they win because they have 100 lawyers. And then the county recaptures that by doing a judgment levy on every other tax holder has to pay what that tax holder didn't pay. So that's another line item. But you can't. I don't think you can just say, okay, this is a recreation unless it's defined in the code. So there's only certain ones that are defined in the code.
Mm.
And their library is one of them you can do. Counties can do a health. And then they got the legislature to pass a planetarium one. So, but for us, I think we just have the option to do general operating one. A library one, an immunity one, and a debt levy one because we have general obligation debt. If we didn't have general obligation debt, we couldn't do a debt levy one for our other debt. Those are the four I'm aware of that we can do. Are there any questions on how the certified property tax works? When we pass that means everyone's on average paying what they paid the year before for their property tax from us. So even if their valuation of their house doubles, then the rate goes down in half and they pay on average, the same. That's what a certified property tax does.
So what doesn't come to effect until, and you told me it's sometimes a year or two delayed, is additional residents. So when our residents have increased, say we had fiscal year 15, I think we had maybe 30 new business. No, we had more than that because we had most of the
Bridgestone.
Bridgestone came into. So there's 43 right there, and those don't get reflected for at least a year, at least.
At least, yeah.
But what we have to understand, though, is that that does increase our overall revenue eventually, you know, tax revenue. But we also service more residents. Yeah. So, I mean, just to say we need to cut for the sake of cutting, I'm not sure that that makes sense.
Especially when, if we had no future plans, if we said, okay, we're just going to go to the bare bones, we're not going to do any more parks. We've given up on Deerfield. We've given up on maintaining any of our current infrastructure. Or we want to go native and turn our parks into meadows, change our codes, say that's okay. You could do some things to cut the budget, but Public Works right now is only going to need more staffing as the city gets older. That's just the way cities work. As they get older, they require more maintenance. So,
do you mind if I take a couple
sure.
of minutes? So I want to give you my thoughts on this. So every year for the last 4 years, I come into this season feeling like I need to keep government from growing. Staff does a real good job of trying to help with that, and I appreciate that. So here's where I'm coming from. More and more IRE tells me we're probably not heading towards a recession. The difference between 0.002315, which is our certified county rate plus the debt service of the golf course, and going to 0.0019, which is where I would like to be, is about $178,000. Is that correct, Cheryl?
Yes.
Okay. So that's the dollar amount. And so every year, when it comes to sales tax, I always try and lowball the revenue with that. Same thing with our community services revenues that comes from the golf course. And as Cheryl mentioned, much of our recreation programs are self-sustaining, and they're about break-even. We're getting more money this year to take care of our roads from the law that was passed in the last legislative session. I think we have about 6 months worth of revenue. Is that correct?
We will get 6 months of revenue, but we haven't received it yet.
Yeah, and so next year we'll have a full year's worth of revenue that
comes. What does that represent in your opinion?
We guesstimated that the increase this year, did we say 45,000? Is that how much we estimated?
They said for fiscal year 2017 it would be 48,000. I only budgeted like 25.
And so we don't know yet, but that was for 6 months. So if we're in a full year, let's just be conservative and say we have 90, at the most 100,000 more. And that's for our roads. Can't be used for anything else. But I imagine that can be used for salary as well, right?
We've never used it for salary.
What's that?
We've never used it for salary.
Okay. So that goes towards more money towards taking care of our roads. And some of the things that have taken place over the last few years are we refinanced our golf bond. That means we're paying less in debt service. And so our sales tax revenue is doing fine. Everyone knows that it's a healthy Utah economy that contributes more to sales tax than point of sale in Cedar Hills, but we will have some incrementally more point of sales coming over this next year, and you know, maybe we get $10,000 more in point of sale because of things that are being done. I don't know. But at any rate, financially we're doing well. Our reserve is at 25%. Every year we put hundreds of thousands of dollars are usually into capital projects in order to take care of these things. So it is my opinion that financially speaking, Cedar Hills is in really good shape. The only unpredictable oddball thing is litigation. And so my preference is that government be small, very small. And if we handle our finances responsibly, then the residents will recognize that. And if we need to go to them at some point because we need to bond for the Harvey property or whatever, then they will respond in voting for that bond favorably if we've handled their monies responsibly. That's where I'm coming from in terms of this. And so I'm not dogmatic about this. This is just my preference. This is where I think I'd like to go. So those are my thoughts.
So I'll chime in with my thoughts.
Yeah.
So the things that I'm reading from Charles' report kind of jive with my concerns. So some of the things he mentions are that long-term our costs go up because our infrastructure gets older and it's going to need more maintenance. I look at litigation expenses being relatively high the last few years. I look at inflationary pressure, which our certified tax rate doesn't take into account. It doesn't get to go up just because inflation goes up. Those things combined are all resulting in higher costs, and we've done a really good job of balancing those higher costs with the trimming that you've mentioned, the ways in which we've saved money by refinancing, the ways in which we've trimmed costs in certain ways. We've managed to play this delicate balancing act for a number of years, and we've done a really good job of keeping property taxes level. I think our residents have a lot to be proud of with respect to the way we run our financial house. I'd put us up against any local city in that regard. My concern is that our longer term costs only go up because our infrastructure continues to age. And we've become extremely dependent on sales tax revenues. If you look at the rates of these things over time, which you can do with the app that I wrote, mm-hmm. we went from a time where our property taxes and our sales taxes were roughly equal in amounts for the year 2000 through the year 2009. They roughly balanced each other out. Even though they were both increasing because our city was growing, we were kind of 50-50 split. But since 2009, all the way forward to now, sales taxes have increased, and we've used that to kind of make up for the increasing cost that we've had as a city as we've aged, and property tax revenue has actually gone down. And so we're now at the point where our sales taxes are at least 50%, actually close to double what our property tax revenues are. What that means for us as a city is that if a recession comes, which they always come, mm-hmm. and those revenues drop, we'll be hurting to cut some stuff. And the more we rely on sales taxes and the less we rely on property taxes, the more we will hurt. I worry that we've not kept up with inflation on our property taxes. I worry that they may be too low. And we may need to look at gradual increases rather than being caught, like many cities around here have been caught, not increasing property taxes for 30 years and then saying, oh, shoot, now we have to double them. And it's very, very painful for residents. As opposed to small increases on a regular basis, which give you the capital you need to take care of your city properly.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from. I just have a different approach to this, which is that I think everyone knows inflation is next to nothing. And so the drop in oil and gasoline is the main cause of that. So inflation is next to nothing. We're getting
more money. We're talking about a 10-year period that we've not kept up with inflation on property
and
taxes.
Sales tax is what it is. It isn't as if there's a recession, which you're right, it will come. But it's not as if there's a recession, it's going to go to nothing.
No.
And so every year I lowball sales tax. All I'm saying is let's not lowball it as much. We're talking about $178,000.
And what I'm saying is let's plan out 20 years in the future, figure out what our maintenance costs are. Let's do like what they do at the utility, when they do a utility revenue study or rate study and say, what are we going to need to do in order to keep up with maintenance in our city? We ought to be doing a similar thing with respect to our general fund and our other maintenance and say, let's project out and make sure that we have revenues coming in to cover costs.
I don't have a problem with that. I think we're doing a good job of taking care of most of our utilities in terms of long-term planning. When I take a look at this, though, we were going to have more money coming in towards fixing roads, which is important. And because we refinance our golf course, we're going to be paying less there. We've maxed out at 25% of our reserve fund. We can't put anything more into that. And all I would like to do is find the difference between $178,000, so the staff does not receive any less revenue. And if we have a reasonable sales tax, instead of me lowballing it so much, maybe we increase it a little bit to where they want it to be, and we lower the property tax by a corresponding $178,000, they're not out of it revenue at all. It's a revenue neutral thing, even though we're giving the residents a reduction in their property tax because it's their money. That's my approach.
I think even sales tax, though, still their money, taxes are always someone else's money. Doesn't matter how where it comes from. My concern is that we end up in a place like the cities around us. I mean, we've had cities around us who have tried to bond for road improvements. They can't get the bond passed. They've tried to bond to have for public safety improvements. They can't get that bond to pass. So instead of actually having any funds to fix these things, they're just not happening. And so the mentality of if we lower things now and then if we need it later, our residents will approve it. We don't know that. They very well may deny it like all these other cities near us are doing.
I think that's a legitimate concern. That's my whole point, is that if we are responsible with the residents' tax money, I believe they'll respond in kind and treat the city favorably in the fact that we have lowered their property tax. Their city tax as a percentage of their total property tax from about 24% when you and I came in, Jenny, to about 19% or a little bit less than that. And even though our budget hasn't grown that much, the county's budget has grown, other parts of their property tax have grown, but we've still kept it in check, which means it's a lower percentage of their total property tax. So I don't want to put us in a bad situation either. I just think there's enough positives for me to say this is the direction I want to go. Anyways, I need to give you guys a break. We can come back and talk about this. It's almost 10:02, so let's take a 10-minute break and be back in 10 minutes.
I don't think we can talk about it because it's not on the agenda.
We're not talking about it tonight.